Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Circle of Respect Book Club Series. We're joined today by Dr. Forney, author of The Civility Solution, What to Do When People Are Rude. Dr. Forney, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
So I wanted to just really get into it and wanted to know if you could briefly discuss for our listeners the history of your work with civility and the Civility Project and really what led you to or motivated you to write this book.
Well, I'm a scholar of Italian literature by trade, and for most of my career I was just a straight literary scholar writing books on medieval Italian literature that all of 12 people read around the world. Mm-hmm. And about 10 years ago, something changed. I realized that I needed to dedicate my time, at least in part, to something that had more direct relevance with everyday life. Mm-hmm. And I was teaching my Dante Divine Comedy course to our undergraduates here at the university. And a thought occurred to me that had not occurred to me before. And the thought was, I want my students to know everything that there is to know about Dante and medieval Italian literature. But even if they did, and then they went out to be unkind to a little old lady on a bus, I would think that I had failed as a teacher. Mm. It was an odd thought, maybe, but it stayed with me. It didn't really change my life. I think that after a life dedicated to the realm of the beautiful, to aesthetics, I was a professor of literature after all, ethics was knocking at my door. And I started to look around for an ethical cause to support and to be an advocate of. And civility, good manners, and politeness seemed to me a much underutilized resource for society. And so I co-founded the Johns Hopkins Civility Project, an aggregate of activities, outreach activities and academic activities to determine what is the meaning and the relevance of civility and good manners in contemporary society. I wrote a first book at the beginning of the new century, Choosing Civility, the 25 Rules of Considerate Conduct. And a couple of years later, my readers kept asking me, why don't I write a book about how to deal with when people are rude to us? And so the Civility Solution, What to Do When People Are Rude, was born.
Right. And having read the book, I really, and for those of our readers who haven't, it really is a great book. I think when you see the first question, what to do when people are rude, what strikes me about the book is how much it makes, really made me think about my own actions and just how I relate to people. And it really just starts to touch on some of the personal things that you bring into your relationships and how they impact how you treat others?
Yes, and in fact, the book is really about, first of all, how to become the kind of person that people are less likely to be rude to in the first place.
Exactly.
So it's preventative, especially in the first part. And the answer is exactly the civility solution of the title, that is, you want to be proactively civil and considerate and kind to others. And in many cases, people will respond in kind. Not always, but in many cases they will, because we are hooked up, we are geared from nature to respond in kind, at least in most circumstances, to the behavior that others address to us.
So one of the things I wanted to ask is that one of the things that you said, you know, other people came to you and asked you, why don't you write a book about rudeness? One of the things that we all ask in our everyday lives is, why are people so rude? So in your opinion, what has happened to civility? And has it just declined over generations? Or are we just interpreting things differently? Are we just rushed in life? What's happening?
If you ask Americans, do you think Americans are rude? About 7 out of 10 Americans think that Americans are rude. Now, if you ask an American, do you think that you are rude personally, the answer in 99.9 of the cases is no. So I have not reconciled the mathematics of that, but I'll keep trying. The fact is that about 75% of Americans think that incivility is a national problem. About the same percentage think that there is a connection between incivility and violence, that incivility very often escalates into violence. And about 80% of Americans believe that the situation has gotten worse in the past 20 years. Now, are we living in times ruder than times gone by? Yes. Are we living in times less rude? Yes, that is also true. And I'm going to explain what I mean by that. Okay. Let's suppose when we talk about a decline in civility in this country, we really talk of a decline of certain established traditional forms of deference and respect that are becoming obsolete. And that is happening. For instance, let's suppose that there are fewer youngsters who will give us their seat on a bus to a pregnant woman today than there were 30 years ago or 40 years ago. Suppose that that's true, and maybe true, but however, when that woman steps into her workplace, the number of men who consider her a peer intellectually and professionally mm-hmm. is higher today than in my father's generation, and I would say that that is a gain in civility. We are more respectful today than in previous generations of the people who do not look like us. Mm-hmm. We have an ecological, environmental consciousness that we did not have two or three generations ago. So these are all gains in civility. And so when we decry the decline, we should also remember that the glass is half full, it's not just half empty. However, having said this, we can certainly mourn for the many rules of civility and good manners that are becoming obsolete, and we can do our part to try to keep them alive as much as possible.
Right. So it seems as though, even though we've grown in many ways, there is still some work to be done.
Yes.
Okay, so what I wanted to touch on in regard to empathy, that's something that we talk a lot with through the youth programs that we have here. And in your book, you said something really powerful. You said that in regard to empathy, we experience it, but we often neglect to make listening to its voice a serious priority. Can you talk a little bit about that statement, and namely, really, what impact does it have on us in our relationships? And how do we start to attend more to element? How do we become more empathetic to others?
Well, to become empathetic, it's like to learn to ride a bicycle or to swim. Mm-hmm. Somebody has to teach us, and we need to practice. Now, as a society, we have been very good in the last two generations teaching and instilling in our children self-esteem. But we have not been very good at instilling self-restraint. Mm. And it's very difficult to become empathetic without being trained in self-restraint and without having taught how to develop the ability of transcending our own immediate needs and desires to tend to the needs and desires of others. We, now, mind you, self-esteem is not a dirty word. Self-esteem is a good thing in good measure. It keeps us sane. It is a sort of immune system for the soul. But when we feed our children oversized portions of self-esteem, we create children who are self-absorbed, who believe that the world revolves around them, and therefore for whom it's very difficult to be considerate and kind. They are just trapped in a cage of narcissism that we have built for them. Now, I hope that a new generation of parents will come around and will redress and rebalance the teaching of self-esteem with the teaching of self-restraint. But in the meanwhile, we have created two or three generations of children who are now adults, who are in the workplace, they are among us, and are us, essentially, who have not been trained very much in the basics of considerate behavior that allows empathy to flourish.
So just a few more questions. And one of the things that, just sort of switching gears here a little bit, one of the things that NCPC, we've done a great deal of work around are the topics of bullying and cyberbullying. A lot of our work has focused on work, again, with youth and teens and tweens. But in your book, you also address workplace bullying. So how does rudeness or incivility in the workplace result from violence, and what strategies can people use to address that?
There are about 1.8 million acts of physical violence perpetrated in any given year in the United States, from a worker shoving a coworker to a worker shooting a coworker. 1.8 million. How do we know that? Because they are reported, which also means that are probably underreported, and it's probably closer to 2 million. Mm-hmm. Now, if we go from acts of physical violence in the workplace to acts of incivility, slights, rudeness, how many non-violent ones, not physically violent, how many do you think there are? Well, probably billions. The fact is that we don't know. Why don't we know? Because they are not reported. What we do know, however, is that many of those acts of physical violence for which we do have a figure have their origin in an act of disrespect, in an act of rudeness, in a slight that spirals out of control. And so one of the important ways that we can make a case for civility in society is that by keeping the levels of civility up, we keep the levels of physical violence down. There is this inverted relationship between the two. And certainly it's not the only case that one can make for making civility part of our cognitive and emotional kit, but it's certainly a very important one. Incivility often escalates, often spirals into violence, into physical violence. And we see that, for instance, in road rage. In an act of road rage, things start when one of the motorists does something while driving that is perceived as a slight. The slight calls for another slight. And then one thing leads to another, and the two careen to an end of the episode where somebody can get shot. And that, one of the reasons for that to happen is because there are two very volatile elements at work, anonymity and stress. Anonymity and stress are two major causes of uncivil behavior. On the road, we are in an anonymous environment because the other driver is not a real human being, is just an anonymous cogwheel of the machine that he or she is driving. And we are stressed because we are late for work, late for picking up our children. And so when the two highly volatile factors collide, that is when a situation of danger, of physical danger, can ensue.
So finally, just we wanted to know, just for our other readers, and I know that this topic is something that everyone, we've received a lot of interest in on our end, and I know many people have read the book and are interested in reading the book for those that haven't. So what's next for you and your work on this subject, and how can people maybe follow that in some of your continued work?
Well, I would like to focus more and more on the younger generations. I would like to tell parents the way I have been doing all over the country and even in other countries, that how important it is for their children to become literate in this form of literacy of goodness that we call civility and good manners. Civility and good manners are not trivial because they do the everyday busy work of goodness. And I want to target the parents with a message that says that social intelligence is a better predictor of success in life and in school than the intelligence that we measure with IQ. It's not that the intelligence that we measure with IQ is not important, but it's a threshold intelligence in many cases. It lets you put the foot in the door. You are smart, there is a position, you get the position. But 10 years down the line, the person who will have made more strides is not necessarily the person who entered with the highest IQ, but it's more likely to be the person who entered with the ability to entertain harmonious relationships with others, to be a good team worker, to be a good communicator, to be a person of empathy. And so civility and good manners are not only things that we do for others, the sum of the sacrifices that we have to make to live in a society. It's something that we do for us. Being kind is, first of all, very good to the kind. And I would like to reach as many parents as possible to let them know this and let them know that when they teach even a simple rule of table manners, they teach that we need that our actions have consequences for others, and we need for our children to understand that. And I want parents to know that when they teach good manners, they teach a primer in moral philosophy to their children, and they give them the training wheels for altruism. It's very good for them, it's very good for the children, it's very good for society, and everybody wins.
Okay. Well, Dr. Forney, I wanted to thank you for speaking with us today. I truly believe the work that you're doing on this issue is innovative, and so many people are interested in learning more. So I first wanted to just thank you for taking the time to speak with us and be a part of the book club.
You're welcome. And also, you may want to remind your listeners that a training in civility and good manners is always a crime prevention strategy. People who are trained in good manners and civility are much less likely to become abusive and violent adults.
Absolutely. Definitely the improvement of relationships and the work and your relationship with not only the people close to you, but the community around you and those that we don't know.
Absolutely, yes. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Thank you so much. And again, for our listeners, if you want to learn more about Dr. Forney and his work, as well as his book, The Civility Solution, you can go ahead and visit our website at www.circleofrespect.org. This podcast will also be available via download at iTunes. So again, Dr. Forney, thank you so much.
You're welcome.